Mike McGlone, Senior Commodity Strategist for Bloomberg Intelligence. Welcome to The Competent Investor. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me on for your first time. Obviously, we know each other, Tom, but I love looking at you, and the viewers can look at us as bookends.
Well, if I can be that handsome by the time I'm your age, I'm doing all right.
Let's go there.
So, Mike, to start, we've seen a nearly 210% gain in silver over the last 12 months.
Yeah.
And nearly 25% already in 2026. What is the chatter inside Bloomberg about silver? Like, is there a lot of talk around it, around the water cooler about silver?
It's the first time in a while we've seen that. And those of us who've been invested in silver forever, and even as strategists, when you hear and see parabolic moves and things like this, and when you get all the questions from what to buy and how to buy it, you know, it's time to sell. Unfortunately, it tweaks my, you're supposed to be selling when they're yelling mantra, which was what really tweaked me in cryptos last year. Now, it doesn't mean it's going to pick the top, but the bottom line for silver is you can bring on silver supply from an underwear drawer, and people do. I saw my mother this over the holidays, and she's been selling some of her silver jewelry that quote unquote dad gave her. She doesn't use it anymore, just cashing it in. And the bottom line though, is I'm looking at silver as, near the end, it's the blow-off stage of a bull market. Now, everybody gets the fundamentals. Get it. Same thing for 4, 5, 10, 2, 3 years. It's all the same. We all get solar. All this gets going on and all that stuff. But there's a certain point in markets as a strategist that I switch over to what always switch over to what matters. Now, I've been bullish silver, not as much as gold, but I'm shocked how it really took off like this. But then you switch over to price. There's three key components in markets, supply, demand, and price. And when price shifts at this pace, yeah, there's a deficit in silver. My silver guys in London have been saying that forever, but then I'll shift it over. And that to me is what we should be thinking right now. Silver might get to $100 an ounce, but this year I think we'll put a high that could last for decades, if history is an example. Maybe it's only a few years. Maybe it gets 100 and then goes back to 50. The good example is the last time we rallied at this type of pace, which silver is running about three times its 60-month moving average, was 79.80. Everybody's heard that before when the Hunt brothers tried to corner the market. That low in 1979, that close, I'm sorry, it was 32. And last year's low was 28. So you get the problem there. It's just the lessons of elasticity in commodities. And yeah, I know everybody wants me to say bullish things like I've done for gold forever, but this is just where you're supposed to be a prudent manager to say thank you. And if you've been long and it gave you that kind of move, you sell it. Remember, silver doesn't produce income. It doesn't. It's and when it goes up like this, it incentivizes supply and de-incentivizes demand.
Well, you know, it's funny that you're bringing this idea to the table. I always want to try to temper expectations. I don't want to hear just the bull case. I want to hear the prudent or the bear case as well. So when we think about, let's say, how we're analyzing these markets, you brought up supply, demand, and price, of course. How is this looking, let's say, from that, you analyze it as a comparison to the 50-week moving average as well. Are basically all of the metrics showing that it is overbought right now?
Yeah. So overbought, simple. You can start from 50 days to go up to 60 months or more. I've used them all. And obviously, the much more volatile, the shorter you go. Days are, even 200 days is a little short for me. I like to use in the big picture macro. And it just depends on which ones you want to use. So I've been standardized with 60 months because 5 years is about average in commodities. It's stable. And I use 30, 40, and 50 months earlier just to give examples. But now that we're heading towards 100, now it's also the psychology of pylon. And then I just switch over to when people say, oh, you're too technical. I love when they say that. I say, no, this is what happens in that supply, demand, price model, which has quantity on the bottom. The price just shifted up. So everything is going to fall. And just the lessons of the devil's metal is called the devil's metal for a reason. And we both used to have hair. I've done my fair share of trading silver. And all I know is you're supposed to hold it for long term. When it gives you parabolic moves like this, you're supposed to take some profits. And that's the way I see it.
Mm-hmm. And then to kind of act as that counterpoint, we already did kind of go over that, but I want to underscore the idea of supply at this point. You know, we're always told that supply is the biggest key to the silver market and that it's been in a deficit for years upon years, how do you think that the average underwear drawer supply picture is enough to let's say quench the demand of the market at this point?
So that I don't try to quantify. I just go by the history and lessons of price and psychology. And like I mentioned, it's three times its 60-month moving average. Even in the peak in 2011, when it got to 50, I mean, the whole thing went to backwardation, which never happens in silver. I remember making that call back then in 2011, and it dropped from there to what, down to five? I mean, that's what you can expect in silver. And just, it might be different. But I just look at the discipline as, here's why I like the key thing is, I switch over to risk manager. And all the trying to figure out exactly the nuances of how much supply is going to come out of underwear drawers. I'm kidding. But I just look back at price and it tells me, switched over to risk manager. If I'm running a desk of a bunch of traders and they're all overweight silver, I have to say, sorry, guys, but you're supposed to be lighting up. No, it's time frame that matters. A couple days never matters. A couple years. Oh, yeah. Even a couple months. I mean, yeah, riding momentum, sure. Momentum should get to 100. I mean, easily you could get to 100, but then go back to 50 and then it can put in a high forever if history is a guide. Just remember the key thing about supply. It's always an issue, but supply always, we'll find supply when prices go up. It might not be overnight, obviously recycling, but it'll come. It always does. And then you just go to the, you know, when it was stuck in below 28 or below and around 20 forever. I mean, remember last year's low was 28. It's not a lot of reason to bring on supply, but yeah, it's going to be coming now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's only a matter of time before that actually starts making its way through the system because, you know, I've been reading and seeing plenty of recyclers and like smelters not even taking new supply at this point because they're so busy with everything else. And there's also the added, let's say, risk of financing and buying that metal. But once that starts to work its way through the system, that creates, you know, a ballast on the negative side for price, I think.
Absolutely. And one thing I have to admit, the key thing I was wrong on last year is I didn't think that gold silver cross would drop much below 80. And here we are at, 55?
Wow.
Okay. We go 52, gold silver cross. It's the key thing that also I like to compare it to many things because we can go back 100 years at a gold silver cross, and there's so many things that are consistent with that. But the gold silver cross hardly ever goes down without the stock market going up and volatility staying low. So here we are. Stock market volatility is extremely low. VIX is at 15. 120-day volatility is at about 11. That's the lowest on a year-end basis since 2017. Stock market volatility is very low. Stock market is going up. It's pulling all the industrial metals with it. Silver is almost 60% industrial. Just 20 years ago, 10 years ago, it was 40% or 50%. It's just shifted over. Mm-hmm. And then you just have to put on your risk manager hat. And I say, yeah, okay. I think it's really cheap versus really expensive versus gold. And then I look at things like silver versus crude oil. Right now, the ratio of silver to crude oil is about 0.69 or so of an ounce. Mm-hmm. You have to go back to 1968 for anything similar. Now, here's the facts. We know silver is in a bull market. We know it's in a deficit. We know crude oil is in a bear market. We know it's in a surplus. But when you get to almost the lowest level ever through commodities that have been around for 100 years, that ratio, you put on your risk manager and hat and say, no, this is not a place to be short silver. And maybe you have to look for rallies in crude oil to sell a bear market. And you definitely, I think, you'd have to look for dips in silver to buy it as a trader. But as an investor, hands off. Markets are telling you, thank you very much. You're supposed to just be prudent and book profits. And that's why I stick and all the other things, I'm looking to how markets figure it out, what will come of it. And this is one thing I'll put an example of. I was bullish gold and silver, all metals, calling for gold to go above 2000 in 2021. 2022 and 2023. I was the McIdiot. I mean, just could not get that one. It was not going up. And yet I kept saying the same thing every year. Finally, out of frustration, I wrote it again, 2024 finally went through. That's the kind of pain you had to take for the gain. Now we're in pretty serious gain. It's just, I just look at crypto. Silver to me looks like cryptos did last year.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I mean, another metric that you're bringing up there is silver versus crude oil, right? There's only been one other time in history where an ounce of silver could buy a barrel of crude.
Yeah, and now it only takes about 3/4 or 2/3 of an ounce of silver for 1 barrel of crude. So yeah, I get it. Commodity traders, yeah, I can see all the in what you're going to see from the traditional supply demand backward looking strategist. Yeah, it's bull of silver. I'm like, yeah, okay. Well, you should have been on that trade 5 years ago, 4 years, 3 years ago. Got it. Yeah, bearish crude oil. Well, a lot of people thought I was an idiot when I called for $40 a crude oil 3 years ago because you just saw what happened. Price shifted the supply demand balance. Now that's an elastic commodity. Gold's really not an elastic commodity, but silver is. And like I said, you can bring on that supply when you want to easily.
So, Mike, going back to that point that you made about stock market volatility being so low while gold is appreciating so fast, why do you think that actually is? Like, is it just that in a way that price is acting as the elastic at this point without the stock market having to have that commensurate volatility?
Well, that's the first to point out that fact, and I'll just piggyback on that fact. Gold has never rallied at this velocity 2 times its 60-month moving average. One way to measure it, you can say it's 3 times its 60-month standard deviation, with stock market volatility staying this low. Never. Now, sometimes it follows the stock market volatility, but oftentimes they've gone together. So maybe it's different this time, but number one thing we have to remember is gold just absolutely loves Mr. President, Mr. Trump. Oh boy, gold just loves him. Just the threatening to fire the chairman of the Federal Reserve for doing his job. Sure, Powell missed it. He was wrong about transitory. Got it. But he's caught up, and Trump did appoint him. But that is just, it's humorous. Even Scott Bessent came out recently, said, yeah, it's probably not good to prosecute the Chairman Powell, by the way, who's going to go down in history as probably a saint compared to Trump, because Trump's got bad timing on his favor. I'll get dig into a little bit. But the geopolitics are pretty phenomenal. I mean, this is amazing. We have a pretty significant hot war getting hotter every day, decisively enabled by China. By one person, Z, and then being executed by one person, Putin, Mr. Vladimir Putin in Russia. And it's trickling down. But the key thing is they're losing famously. They've lost so far, lost Syria. They've lost Iran's always getting capitulated, already having problems, being subdued. Venezuela's coming, having problems. And so the tilt's going the right way, but that means there might be desperation coming out of this. But to me, the key thing that I'm sensing from gold, my interpretation of gold, looking back from the future, attempting to, there's no risk in that, is it's telling me that we're way overdue a little bit of normalization in rapidly advancing risk assets, most notably the stock market. So the key ratio I like to watch is the ounces of gold for one S&P 500. Now, we mentioned how many ounces of silver took for one barrel crude oil, but if you look, it's 1.51 right now. I can go back 100 years in that. And the initial peak in this ratio was 1.54 in September in 1929. Now that put in a peak that lasted forever. We went down. Now we went way above that, but it's been a pivot ever since. Now I was calling for this to break down last year from it was like 2.3 or so. Now it's broken down to 1.54. I think it's going to 1 to 1, but to me that's just indicative of what's happening is just the fact that over time, the price of gold should, an investment of the rock should always underperform the S&P 500 total return. Over time, that S&P 500 total return divided by gold total return, I'm saying, because you get those earnings, you don't get that in gold, should always underperform. But if that ratio is stuck, it stopped going up from the same level we are now in 1997. So here we are, what, there were almost 30 years? Getting there of if you had just bought and held gold, you'd been much better off than watching CNBC and Bloomberg and CNN all day and watching the ticker on the S&P 500 and stocks. That's not a good sign. So I look at it as, to me, this is towards the end game of normal reversion. Now, we all know how expensive the U.S. stock market, basically 2.3 times GDP. To put that in context, if the S&P 500 goes back to its 200-day moving average, which just a few days ago was 10%, now it's about 9%. That's about 25% of GDP. One little move. That's the most in almost 100 years. That's just how significant it is. So what's happened in this country now is the stock market has become the economy. Now, the last time that happened, it was 1929, a little bit 1999. in the U.S. And the only other example of that in the U.S. in history was 1989 in Japan, and did not work out well. Now, there's good reasons for this, you know, America's. But the point is, markets look forward, and they're so expensive, and I think gold's figuring it out. But that's what I think I'm fearful is going to happen this year. To me, gold's telling us, Tom, that the market's overdue for some volatility. Stock market. Mm-hmm. Typically, it means markets goes down. So maybe it gets this 200-day moving average. God help us. What if it gets this 200-week moving average? It will. Just a question of when. And that's when I look at all this that's happening in the metals is just pure frightening, particularly gold, because we've never done this. So that's my interpretation of what's happening and what will happen. And that's why it's pretty. I add to that. So it emboldens me to say that where I've been wrong forever is, you know, calling for the stock market to have a decent pullback. But I've been able forever to find alpha in Bitcoin. Now, I stopped that last year. I gave up. No, 2024, gave up in Bitcoin. And I'm stopping with alpha in gold. It's just too expensive now from alpha in the stock market. So where's your alpha? I don't know. I think it might be T-bonds. But to me, this is all part of this setup that we're going to look back from the future and say, yeah, that was the warning that the stock market was due for just a one-third correction. It's stuff that used to happen. Let's start with 10%. But that's so unanticipated and such an anathema now to me. That's when you expect it, when you at least expect it should happen. I'll give you the example is we have like JP Morgan just came out with awesome earnings. Economy is as good as it can get. And markets are priced for that. So my point is that we price for perfection. Yeah, well, maybe gold's telling us that.
Mm-hmm. Mike, do you think that, you know, as we talk about that S&P to gold ratio getting back to 1-to-1, do you think it dips below that because of, you know, just a reversion to the mean or a balance to that higher peak that we saw?
Yeah, well, right now, one bridge at a time. The key thing right now is just where we are right now. Just a year ago, if I was having this conversation, I would have been shocking myself that we're just hovering at a 1.5 ratio. Because a year ago, I was pointing out how if you looked at maybe a 50-week, a couple, I forget what periods, maybe 200-week, Bollinger Band was the narrowest ever. So that ratio is ready for a breakout. I just thought it was going to go down, and it did. And now where do we go from here? So it's where the next steps are. So here's a key thing I'm thinking for last year, gold grabbed alpha from everything. It took alpha from Bitcoin and cryptos, and it just took it. And that was a shocker. People are just finally figuring it out. And I think what's going to happen this year is it's more likely to lose alpha to treasuries in a normal deflationary environment, which is way things have always worked in history. When you pump up risk assets this much, they always revert. It's just a question of when. Now, cryptos have already started to do that. The housing market's potentially peaked. You can see the gold is broken out versus beta, and there's similar signs there that everything's about to happen, and now it's about timing and being right. So I think this year, to me, I look at my outlook for this year based on all those signals is we're going to get number one outlook, I think, is volatility is going to pick up, increase. I mean, 11%, 120-day volatility, the average over time is like 16, 17%. So I'm looking at like simple trades for this year where we should go. And I'm looking at it's the way I think as a strategist, you should be as a trader, completely flat and look for opportunities. And so far, the first opportunity, I think, to put on a little risk with some tight stops. First opportunity I thought so far is Bitcoin reaching around 94,000. I'm thinking, oh, that's a worthy sell. Maybe keep yourself in it and stop yourself out. You can stay above 100,000. And same thing in copper. Copper's a metal. It's going up in the back of all the metals. It's $6 a pound. It's a new high. It's great. Think of the way copper is and all the industrial metals, which is silver, is in that bucket now. It's no longer a precious metal. For copper to stay up here and silver and all the precious metals, platinum, palladium, and you know, aluminum to stay up here, it's a sign of global demand pull strength in industrial metals. Is that going to happen? Maybe. Maybe we'll get lucky, but the number one thing for all those go up, industrial metals, the stock market has to go up. And that's why I think the risk is they're pricing in too much optimism. Just a normal 10% correction we haven't had. We're way overdue for that.
Mm-hmm. I want to pick back up on that point that you made about T-bonds taking some of that alpha from gold. Is this basically going back to what we started with at the beginning, the supply-demand price?
Yeah.
Setup yeah. That you're looking at.
So let's look at, like, I look at T-bonds the same way I characterize gold. I've been long on U.S. Treasuries going up for at least 3 years. Guilty. For those, and I'm a sayer, those who are our audience who do it, I'm sorry, that's just way it is. I mean, I was wrong on gold forever. Finally, it picked up. That's the way I see T-bonds now. But the number one thing keeping everything elevated in terms of inflation is on a scale of 1 to 10 on a world basis, on a historical basis, is the U.S. stock market. So I look at T-bonds right now. Basically, it's about almost 5% coupon, 4.82. It's basically a put on the S&P 500 that gives you 5% return and actually went up 7%. Despite on a 1 year basis, despite the stock market going up 20% on one basis. So it's a put that is actually appreciating with the market to go up. And I think when the market goes down, it creates that and reiterates those deflationary forces that were in place before COVID, then that kicks in. To me, that's the trade. I've been wrong on it. But to me, that's all I see right now is the potential. And then I look at like those little options. But the bottom line is it's the pain. I've been in pretty severe pain being wrong in that one forever. And I'm sure a lot of investors know that feeling. But the key thing about T-bonds, if I look at last year's, they have very low volatility. So my hypothetical last year was just being outright long gold and long T-bonds. But gold trades about three times the volatility of a treasury bond. I just look at that TLT. So on a normal portfolio, if you have four times the weight of treasuries, of T-bonds versus gold, you did pretty well last year at very low volatility, and you beat everything. So what for this year is going to happen? And that's just kind of things I think that are understated when we see the stock market just won't go down. And so to me, that's going to be the next big trade. The first trigger for that is just getting, you know, getting that 200-day moving average on the S&P 500 to roll over like it has in Bitcoin.
Well, I think that's, you know, an interesting take and an interesting idea. And I think we need to, let's say, reiterate for listeners that this isn't a, let's say, a quality acknowledgement or a quality argument of T-bills. It's just what is going to perform, what is going to give you that alpha, rather than if you love it or hate it or think it's the worst thing ever.
Exactly. And it's not, I mean, well, they're the safest investment on the planet, but it's the key thing about T-bonds, obviously, is the duration. So I've traded zeros forever. And I have to admit, this is the market that I thought I knew the best. I started in the treasury bond trading, bond futures pit in Chicago Board of Trade in 1988. It was the busiest future pit on the planet. Now it doesn't really matter anymore. Actually, most of that liquidity has gone to the 10-year notes. And so, and I've been able to, that's what helped me get out of the pits, is getting that market right. Got transferred to New York. The New Yorkers thought I knew something about bonds. And that was in 93. But I've been wrong on this one forever. So maybe I'm just hoping it's just the extreme pain before I get it right. But the quality is, I never have to worry about that. I mean, the key thing is also, let's not forget the motivation of our U.S. president. Number one, he wants energy prices lower. Get it. You're supposed to sell rallies in crude oil, and he have pre-existing trends in his favor. Number two, he wants interest rates lower. Well, he's obviously see the pressure he's putting on the Fed for that. And he wants, and part of that is lower interest rates. And they're already curtailing supply of T-bonds and putting in T-bills. So they're going to get what they want. But there's a bit of an oxymoron with trying to run the economy hot, pushing back in the Fed and having interest rates and T-bonds go lower. But don't underestimate the motivation. So let's put it this way. When he first got elected a little bit over a year ago with the, you know, we all knew the mantra for energy prices going to go lower. I pointed out, well, the pre-existing trends are in his favor. Crude oil almost always bottoms around 40 after going up that high. Natural gas always goes down to 2. It's heading there now. It's just the trends are in his favor, and he's accelerating that. But we're seeing the methods. Look what just happened to Venezuela, pushing, you know, trying to pressure the Middle East for more oil. And now the U.S. is now the price maker in crude oil. It used to be the price taker. So his methods in T-bonds will be interesting, but the most simplistic way to get really the things he needs and wants for re-election, that's lower inflation, number one. Remember, when that's the key thing that's kind of oxymoronic about trying to push back against the Fed and run it hot, is the number one issue in elections is inflation and affordability. So best way to solve that whole problem is just have the stock market drop 10%. I guarantee you, almost guarantee you, that 10-year note yield at 4% or bond yield at 4.8 will probably drop a handle, drop to 3. Crude oil will drop to 40. The average price of a gallon of gasoline in this country right now, about 2.8, will drop to 2. And a mortgage is right now about 6 and change, will drop to 5. Mm-hmm. One little 10% correction, it lasts a while. If he figures that out, maybe, I was hoping you'd figure it out last year, but it went down so down and up so fast. That's the kind of signal you get near the end of bull markets. Mm-hmm.
Well, and going back to this idea of, you know, basically the threats against Powell and the Federal Reserve on this criminal indictment idea, Does that just basically provide more uncertainty to the markets at this point?
It is, but it's not showing up in the stock market yet. So we saw that one little blip in the bond market. It's all showing up in gold and precious metals. Now it makes sense in gold, but not in silver. Sorry, silver is just a speculative blow off top stage right now. And I'm not the, as an ex trader, I wouldn't short it. But if you've been long and you go say thank you, I'll take some of that money. You don't ever want to mess with the market gods when they give you a decent amount of money. But this is a silly stage of the year. Remember last year, this time is when crude oil made a peak, corn made a peak. There's always optimism in stuff that really shouldn't be. Now, it took a while for Bitcoin to make a peak. But I'm that kind of stuff is, I think, a bit of trial balloons that he does. He's quite clever. But the bottom line is, if you really want to lose Wall Street, is push back on the chairman of the Fed. And now we might not love him, but the independence of the Fed is sacred. Now that's mostly global, certainly from anybody who runs money from an economic standpoint. And of course, we know it's his personality, but let's remember who appointed Mr. Powell is Mr. Trump. And let's also remember what happens when you get in a position of that, where you're going to be like that, where you're going to be judged by history. Do you want to be looked back in history as the idiot, like Aaron Burr, who shot Alexander Hamilton, or do you want to look back and be looked back in history, or even like Arthur Burns, who not an idiot, but was not considered as highly as Paul Volcker? And that, to me, is what's kicking in this phase. It doesn't matter who you appoint there; they don't want their name to go down like mud. They have to do the right thing, and so I'm not so worried about who's going to be the next chairman. But his methods are quite they're good for gold, but gold's already priced a lot of it in.
Well, another part of Trump's legacy here, Mike, is very clearly tariffs. We're speaking on the morning of Tuesday, January 13th, and the Supreme Court is expected to rule on the legality of the tariffs tomorrow on Wednesday. The betting markets seem to be showing the likelihood of them being ruled illegal. What are the implications of this ruling, and really, what is the point of the ruling if the proceeds don't have to, from the tariffs don't have to be repaid?
Yeah, so that is the key thing. The sense I'm getting from all markets that they'll just pull out other little methods to keep the tariffs on working. If there's anybody better on the planet working around the law, Mr. Trump. And that's what I've heard. So the market doesn't seem to be worried about it. But if anything, the way I see it is it's an uncertain factor, and volatility is too low for these uncertainties. And that's why I stick with that. The risks are, how much better can it get for how expensive we are in the U.S. stock market? 2.3 times GDP, almost the same versus MSCI XU index, almost the highest ever until last year. We pulled that back a little bit. So to me, it's such a great uncertainty. I'm going to see how it pans out. But I look at it, it's going to probably enhance, maybe be look back as a trigger for normalization, meaning just getting back to 200-day moving average S&P 500. Markets are always looking for triggers when they get this extended, and it's just a question of what it's going to be and how that works out between you and me, Tom. I really don't know. And I've done enough reading on it. Say, whatever the Supreme Court does, Trump will find another way to keep some kind of tariffs in place and find other methods, just like what's been happening with Iran, where he pointed out that, if anybody does business with Iran, well, sorry, but the U.S. market's not open to you. That's not profound. That's been being done for a while. And that was what Robert Lighthizer pointed out in his book, No Trade Is Free. It makes complete sense. And it's one thing some of us love him or hate him, but like he pointed out about the U.S. market, if you want access to the best, most demand pull market in the world, sure. But you better pay to play by rules if you want in. If you don't want in, yeah, go ahead. Try sell what you can to China. Good luck with that one.
Well, Mike, how do you see, of course, China has been one of our biggest trading partners for forever. And exactly as you pointed out earlier as well, the idea of demand pull for the, let's say, the top 10 metals is, requires a bigger, let's say, global bull market. But if we think about the Chinese situation at this point, we're seeing export restrictions on starting on silver. We're seeing it on other like rare earths, for example. Let's take the particular example of soybeans versus corn, and try to understand what, let's say, what role China is playing looking out over the next 5 to 10 years here in commodities.
So China, to me, is a phenomenal country that's exporting massive deflation, just the fact that we have to have 100% tariffs on these awesome vehicles they're making at great prices shows you, if you're in Germany, you're making IC cars, internal combustion cars, anybody on the planet, and you see these awesome vehicles coming out of the U.S. I mean, we've seen this before. So to me, China is very much similar to Japan was in the late 80s. I was there. I traded it. And I lived there. I didn't live there, but I worked for Japanese firms, visited there many times. I remember that peak in 1989, but many times the size. The key thing to remember, I think, about what's happening in China is they have to export. Now that the U.S. has shut them off, the rest of the world's starting panic. Europe's having issues. They're just pressuring. They have to. It's like the Sorcerer's Apprentice from Fantasia. Scott Bessent even mentioned this last year. They don't have a mechanism to really shut off this massive excess of productivity they're doing. They don't have internal consumers to buy it. And the best place in the world to sell is the U.S. Well, that's been shut off. What's next best? Europe? Well, they're supporting a war in that country. So I look at China as a great example where things are going. It's the deflationary forces. And I look at bond person by nature, having started in U.S. bond business, starting that U.S. the China 10-year note, I've been pointing this out for a while, is 1.86%. Now, yeah, it's gone up a little bit from 1.76% a year ago. But the U.S. 10-year note is 4.16. I think that once we get that little backup in U.S. stock market, we're all going to 1.86 in China in terms of deflationary forces. It's the classic example of just an emerging market that rallied too fast without those natural check and balances that we have in this country. We have a self-correcting mechanism in this country, i.e., Mr. Trump doesn't do well, he's gone in 3 years. That's going to happen. They don't have that. And the self-correcting mechanism here is awesome. They don't have that. So that supply deflationary force, I think it's just waiting for a little trigger to kick into that next big trade, which I've been pointing out might be T-bonds. And I think gold's already passed. It was gold, now it's passed. But the geopolitics is going to keep it frayed. The key thing is to remember is this is a Cold War that's getting hotter every day, completely almost led by China, unlimited friendship with Mr. Putin, and you know, supporting a war in your backyard and your best customer's backyard. I think it's going to be looked back from the future as very stupid, but for now we have to deal with it. And the way it's being dealt with, and just look at it this way: so China, the next is probably looking over at what just and you know I'm what supported the war. And Mr. Putin's probably looking over what the U.S. did in Venezuela and said, oh, my gosh, we've been fighting this war for almost 4 years now. We lost almost 250,000 people. And what Mr. Trump just did in Venezuela is what we wanted to do in Ukraine. And he did it in like a couple hours. They got to be looking at themselves saying, oh, boy, I think that it's they're finding out that this 20th century technology and tactics are not working. You got to step it up to the 21st century. Now, there's all the imperfections, but what he just did in Venezuela was just a shock. And even a little bit in Israel and some other things, it's impressive.
Mm-hmm. So do you think that the large geopolitical picture, the large geopolitical tensions that are percolating here, you mentioned the Iran situation, you know, we're constantly seeing news reports coming out, countries warning any of their citizens to get out of Iran right now. Do you think that that's the, let's say, the biggest wild card for the markets coming into this year?
Oh, yeah, that's definitely one. Well, you know, I was pumping gas in 1979 when that the Iranian revolution kicked in. I remember we had to start pricing in I was a teenager in half gallons because it went over $1. So it's always going to be stuck in my brain. That going potentially reverting that finally is going to be a shocker. Now it's great for the world, everything. It's horrible for crude oil prices. It's great for deflation. That and another thing. So those are probably things that are bad for gold. Look at another thing that might be bad for gold. Maybe we get detente in Russia, Ukraine. And the stock market keeps going up and interest rates stay high because, you know, stock market keep goes up, it's going to keep inflation and interest rates high. Why would you want gold in that environment? That might be real bad. So there's a lot of real things can make gold drop $1,000 in a heartbeat. This is what happens when you get this expensive. That's why I say if I've been long and forever, you're supposed to say, thank you. You doubled your money in a couple of years. You can take half off and you still got the same investment. So to me, yeah, that's a key thing. It's the risk of anything going nuclear that I'm worried about. Some kind of disaster, like, you know, waking up in the morning and hearing about fallout. Mm-hmm. Is what I'm really worried about, and gold is the place to go for that. treasuries too. But yeah, predicting it's another story, but it looks like it's a matter of time that we might see the current regime that's been in place in Iran since 1979 fall. That'd be a shocker. I just remember when the Berlin Wall fell in 89, I was in the trade pits. It was such a late, lightning feeling.
So, Mike, backing out a little bit, what do you think are the markets that are going to experience deflation over the coming year?
So the number one thing that matters is the U.S. stock market. So we're already seeing a little bit of that in housing. It hasn't gone down a lot, but you can see it everywhere. Certainly in condos and real estate in Miami, which I'm more exposed to, is recently reduced. The bidding wars are over. Interest rate. It's just that classic cycle is peak for now. But the number one thing, the only thing, the 10 is still the U.S. stock market. That's why that good old S&P, Tom, is all that matters. So I like to say when I was on, I don't know how many calls with other strategists were pointing out these bullish inklings they had on industrial metals. I'm like, okay, well, you have to assume the stock market goes up. And what do you mean? Like, if you have your value at risk model and you're long a basket industrial metals, which are up about the same, then Bloomberg Industrial Metals Index last year was up about the same as the global commodity, the global equity markets, which are up about 22% to 101.5 $2 trillion, something like that. If you're long and bullish industrial metals, you have to have that stock market go up. Number one, if it drops 10%, fully expect your copper, aluminum, silver and platinum plating positions to drop 20%. It's just the way we are now. We're so dependent on that U.S. stock market. So it's all that matters. Now it's priced and it's going to go up 10%. It's fully expected. It's assumed. And that's where you get to the point where human nature will never change. It's wonderful how we get like this. And that's when it's going to change. But then I just say timing's everything. Gold was a good leading indicator. And that's why I just like, as a strategist, people say, what are you going to buy? And I said, well, what you shouldn't, I'm like, why don't you just sit in treasuries? Now, I can't give investment advice, but no one's ever said I can't say overweight treasuries.
Yeah. Well, and of course, it's not investment advice. That's just what you're doing.
Well, it's not much. It's just part of what I say as a strategist. Like I've been people asking, what commodities should go up next year? Well, this year, I think we probably get to a low price cure in crude oil. If it gets to in the 40s, it'll be a chance to buy it. Natural gas gets to 2. It's always a chance to buy it there, almost always. Corn gets down to like 350. That's usually a chance. Soybeans gets to around 9, and usually a chance. They're all heading there. Well, that might be your chance to buy it, but you want to start here? If I did, I get stopped out, and then we'd make those lows and then go up. Or you can look for rallies to sell. Now, to me, that's more the mantra. Crude oil's up a little bit, $60. I point out the range before COVID was between 42 and 65. Maybe we get to 65 and you sell, because every time it goes up, more supply comes on because people hedge. So it's looking at it tactically, as I think this year. Last year, I was willing to say you should be overweight gold. Now I think you're supposed to just wait for opportunities.
Do you think that supply demand picture as well is very applicable to cryptos right now and Bitcoin?
Oh shit. Well, the difference, I love that. I love going there, Tom, with cryptos, because obviously I'm bearish cryptos. I think it's worthy short right now. The broad crypto market, the Bloomberg Galaxy Crypto Index, was down 20% year last year in the spot, despite the stock market up 20%. That's a failure. You're supposed to be selling this rally, I think. Maybe risk 10%, look to make 50%. Same with Bitcoin. I think around 94,000 is a worthy short. Standing above 100,000 is wrong. The problem I have with it is point out the facts. There was one crypto in 2009. Yes, Bitcoin's different. And now there's 29 million listed in coinmarketcap.com. There is an unlimited supply of these things. And we had a classic case for a peak. I think what happened last year was classic case for a peak. Obviously, we had the halving, the launch of ETFs, and then Mr. Trump switching over to, to a zealot. From being a, being a convert and switching to a zealot, classic peak signs. And what are you buying when you buy Bitcoin? There's no basis. When I buy a crude oil future, I have a basis, crude oil. When I buy gold future, there's gold. When I buy a T-bond future, I have T-bonds. So I buy stocks, I have something as earnings. There's unlimited supply of these things, massive speculation. I think the whole thing just needs a purge. So I'll give you one good example. I always like to deal, there's so many millions of them, and there's so many of them that are worth billions that should go to zero. So I love to use an example of Dogecoin. It's number 9. It's worth $22.7 billion. Now, it peaked in 2024 when Trump got elected, around $60 billion. So I think it's going to go down to 2 or nothing or zero. And then we'll have a nice bottom to play with. And that's just a matter of time. And the best way for that to happen, number one, Tom, is let's get things tokenized, get things on the same chain. When you have Bank of America, which was about the same valuation of Dogecoin a year over a year ago, next to Dogecoin, which one you're going to get buy, which one you're going to short on an opportunity. You're going to buy the one that has earnings and profits, and you're going to sell the one that's just meh. And so I think that's to me is what I'm looking forward to. And I don't know what's going to trip up that outlook, but the bottom line is unlimited supply, massive speculation. And to me, it's just a matter of time. We have to get through that low price cure, and I don't think it's even near there yet.
Mm-hmm. Mike, you and I have spoken before about what your key commodities are for the year. What are they for 2026?
Yeah, that's when I have to say treasuries, and I'm being facetious. I admit that. I don't know. I think, like I said, I just was, as a strategist, I was willing to say, yeah, copper getting above $6 a pound, I think that's a worthy sale. Mm-hmm. A short, maybe risk 10%. Who knows how much? Look to make 30 or 40. Same thing in Bitcoin. I think it was a worthy sale. I'm looking, maybe it'd be nice if we get low enough in crude oil and corn and soybean and wheat and natural gas. They're all the same bucket. They're the elastic commodities heading lower. If they can get low enough, I think it's worthy to buy. But overall, the bottom line from a broad commodity standpoint is the facts of last year. The Bloomberg Commodity Index was up about 15-16%. The S&P 500 was up about 17%. You see the connection? But within the commodity market, we saw stuff that's never happened, Tom, which tilts me over to just staying out. And that is, we've never had crude oil rally at such a velocity, around 70%, with gold rallying at such velocity, around 70%, with crude oil dropping at such velocity, about 20%. So that was almost, almost 90% difference. The last time we had a similar disparity was in 2008. So when the world's most significant industrial commodity collapses and the world's ancient store value rallies that much, it should. I heed the warning. To me, that's a warning.
Excellent. Mike, is there anything else that you'd like to leave our listeners to think about before we wrap up here today?
Well, I really appreciate you going, Tom, and thanks for having me on. And good luck and congratulations with your new show.
Thank you.
I think the bottom line this year is my base case is we will get a pickup in volatility. From a trader standpoint, which is my background, pitch is this is an ideal opportunity to be way underweight on any type of risks and take opportunities when you get them this year. And I've already mentioned two, I think, have come in. And I have a feeling it's going to be one of those years. Maybe we'll just say the S&P 500 was down 10%. That was it. If it's up 10%, everybody will say, meh. Well, of course, it's priced in. I say wait for opportunities. And the bottom line, I think, is at some point, the hardest thing to do is to lighten up on rapidly and risk assets that everybody think are going to, that's gone up a lot, and everybody thinks are going to keep going up. Mm-hmm. The hardest thing to do sometimes is just give something back to the market. So here's the one thing I'll mention to everyone. Back at the end of 2024, Michael Saylor of MicroStrategy tempted the market gods. He doubled down on a 10X and pushed back on Mr. Trump for being in cash. Well, he's learned that lesson. MicroStrategy is down to about 60%. Don't double dog there to market gods. So I'm warning people.
Good way to put it. Mike, thanks so much for your time. Of course, your Twitter feed is an excellent follow at Mike McGlone, MCGLONE 11. Mike, thanks so much for your time today. Always appreciate it.
My pleasure, Tom.